Good evening. This is Life Rattle, the story show. I'm your host, John Dunford. Tonight, on Life Rattle number 1302, we feature three stories by new Life Rattle writer, Stephen Rahman. Stephen Rahman was born in 1989 in the tiny country of Kuwait, where his parents and three siblings were raised. The family moved to Scarborough, Ontario, in 1998, and Stephen immediately embraced the new culture. In addition to picking up basketball and PC gaming, Stephen's favorite pastimes included reading Harry Potter and other fiction fantasy books, as well as reading endless MBA articles. His 6 years at university were marred by pot smoking, poor time management, and an obsession with basketball. Upon graduation in 2013, Stephen Rahman was offered a job at a software company as a marketing sales associate. There's honesty in Stephen Rahman's writing. Our young narrator is not afraid to show himself. He doesn't hold back and always remains self-aware even when he knows he's making a mistake. In our first story tonight, a university student, suspended from school, pretends to his father and friends that he still attends classes. Let's listen now to Evening Class, written and read by Stephen Rahman.
Evening Class by Steve Rahman. Steve, wake up, Dad yells. It's Tuesday. Don't you have school today? I roll over in my bed and check my cell phone. It's 9:15 and I see there's a text message. Daniel asked me what time I'll be arriving at school. I can barely see the screen through my pounding head. My parched mouth yearns for water. My stomach aches. I threw up all the Chinese food I ate at Hongshan last night. Yeah, I have late classes today, I mumble to Dad. Then I fall back to sleep. I arrive at school around 3 and immediately call Dan. Where are you at? I ask. Come to the parking lot, he replies. I slowly walk over to the farthest parking lot from campus. We've been meeting here after classes for the past 3 months. Dan leans against the rear door of his 2001 four-door silver Acura. I give him a fist bump. What up, bro? What's good, man? Dan replies. Not much. Want a ball today? I get into his car and pull out my grinder. I call Chad and Kwashi. They're all down to play around 4. Sick, Dan says. This shit is supposed to be amazing. I hold out the joint I rolled. Check out this roll. I perfected this shit. Dan admires the joint packed so perfectly that it looks like a cigarette. Too much practice, bro. He laughs as I spark the joint. Dan is my best friend at school. He always arrives early and leaves late. So when I do decide to turn up on campus, I usually hang out with Dan. He doesn't know I've been suspended from school. No one knows. I simply pretend to go to class every day. This is my second suspension, and that means I'm not allowed to take courses for the next 12 months at the University of Toronto, Scarborough. After we smoke, we stumble out of Dan's car and head towards the gym. I've always hated the UTSC campus. University of Toronto, big deal. I study biology. What real use is biology to anyone? In my intoxicated state, however, I appreciate the university's clean walkways and the glass buildings. The brightly lit student center has large windows with ample sitting areas. Students walk up and down the main path leading towards the heart of campus. I nervously avoid the gaze of those walking past me. Paranoia from the pot doesn't put me in a social mood. My mind races as the excitement of hearing basketballs bounce rises in my chest. I give props to Kwashi and Chad and yell, "I got next," to no one in particular. As we wait for our turn to play, Kwashi, Chad, and Daniel discuss our game plan. Steve, you following? I hear Kwashi say my name and snap out of my daydream. You're gonna have to guard Ravi. He's a shooter, don't forget. Don't give him any space. I nod lazily as we all stand up. I eye Ravi and think about what Kwashi said. It isn't hard to play when I'm high. It's easy to focus on just one thing, but anything more is difficult. I step onto the court. The high consumes me, and the next 3 hours go by in a blur. The game ends around 8, and I shower. Dan and I grab a sub from the student center. I buy the most expensive sub on the menu with double meat. "How was class?" Dan asked me. "Did you even go? Didn't you have a lab today?" "Of course I went," I lie. "You think I'd miss the lab? It's worth like 5% of my mark." "Haha, just asking, man. Chill," Dan says. "What are you up to tonight?" "I don't know, man. Probably just going to go chill with Rodas and these guys downtown. Want to come chill?" "Doubt it. I have work. Gotta wake up early tomorrow." "That's cool, man." We finish our subs. I give Dan another fist bump and then call Rodas. "Yo, where are you at?" "Just about to reach your school," Rodas says. "Wait by the pickup area." "Aight." I stomp out my cigarette. I pull out the bag of weed when I see Rodas drive up. I climb onto the passenger seat and administer our unique handshake. I've known Rodas since the beginning of high school. Our late-night adventures have kept us close over the years. Even though he goes to York University and I attend UFT, we manage to see each other almost every other day. "What up, D? What you saying?" "I'm good, man. Nah, no classes. Just played ball. What about you?" "Same. Just finished class." I roll another perfect joint as Rodas drives us downtown. We argue about the latest NBA news and listen to Jay-Z. At around 10, we arrive at Fairbanks, a strip club. We nod at the bouncers and strut inside. We're regular visitors. They don't even bother checking our ID anymore. We join our friends, Stefan and Tony, at our usual table. "Hold up, guys," I say. "Let me get the drinks tonight." I walk over to the ATM, insert my debit card, and withdraw $200. As I settle back in at our table, the waitress comes over and we order a couple of pitchers. I hand her $40. "Keep the change. Can you bring over Cindy, please?" I met Cindy 2 weeks ago and have already visited her at least 6 times. "Sure, hon," the waitress says, but she's a 40-minute wait. "No problem." "Is Heidi free?" Tony asks. "And Mona?" chimes in Stefan. The waitress takes the names of the strippers and walks away. We start drinking and watch a stripper dance on stage. Her curves are perfect. The way she arches her back and moves her waist mesmerizes me. I want her even more when she licks her breasts and stares out at the crowd. I drink an entire pitcher by myself, while the rest of the guys slowly drain the other. We order another round. At around 11:30, Cindy beckons me over. I stand up and balance myself, and slowly stagger towards her. I grab her around the waist and whisper in her ear, "Let's go to the back room." She holds out her hand. I give her $160. Cindy leads me through a dark hallway into the back room. She undresses and sits down on the edge of the bed. "Steve, wake up," Dad yells. "Don't you have school today?" I roll over in my bed and check my phone. No new messages. My head pounds. I reach for the Gatorade I placed on my bedside table the night before and knock it over. I can still smell Cindy's perfume on my clothes. I must have forgotten to change after Rodas dropped me off. As far as Dad knows, I have another evening class. I fall back to sleep.
That was Evening Class, written and read by Stephen Rahman. The narrator in our second story has a personal interest in learning who his boss suspects is stealing inventory from the store. Let's listen now as Stephen Rahman reads his story, Behind Closed Doors.
Behind Closed Doors by Steve Rahman. Rob's been in that meeting forever, Ferdinand tells me and my fellow co-workers as we stand in the customer service area. What meeting? I ask. With who? Some guy from head office. I think his name is Z. The tall, bald, muscular guy, pipes in Sophie. He's so dreamy. I shrug and turn away. Why is Z here? I wonder. He usually visits when there's an issue within the store. Someone's getting fired today, I blurt out loud. Everyone looks around nervously. The bright early sun shines through the clean front windows and brightens the aisles. With no customers in the store, the operations team huddles together and gossips about Z. I bet you it's Nero. He's always late, Sophie guesses. Z's probably here to fire him. I'm always late, and I've never been fired. I laugh uneasily. But you're in ops, and Lynn loves you, Verdolin points out. Lynn, in her mid-30s, is our supervisor. She has a maternal aura about her that makes everyone call her mom. She'll never fire you, Verdolin assures me. I smile and turn to help a customer that has walked in. I can hear the conversation continue in the background. I think it's because of all the missing movies and headphones, Sophie whispers. I tense up a little and complete the transaction with the customer. Have a nice day, sir. Julian, the product process manager, walks into the customer service area. Hey, Julian, what's up? Not much, man. Z's here, so make sure the area looks good. Julian overlooks the warehouse, in charge of all products that enter and leave the store, and probably knows the reason for the meeting. Julian, do you know why Z is here? I ask casually, not wanting to seem too interested. Sophie and Verdolin gather around. From what I know, there's been some theft internally. They caught the person on camera, so Z came to talk to Rob. Oh. I look at the closed door where Z and Rob sit behind. Who is getting fired, I wonder. I go immediately into panic mode. It can't be me. No one could have caught what I did on camera. Besides, that was like a year ago. How would they keep records from that long ago? I executed the perfect plan. No one in the world could have found out. Hey, Steve. New schedules are out, Sophie tells me. Take a picture before I put it in the binder. I pull out my cell phone and look for my name on the schedule. My name's not on it. Uh-oh. I'm Sophie. Why am I not on the schedule? Sophie quickly scans the schedule. I don't know. Did you book it off, maybe? Nope. I go back into panic mode. Was I not scheduled because they plan on firing me? Did Lynn know Z would be here today and hence didn't schedule me on purpose? The door opens and Rob walks out in a blue shirt and khaki pants. He's followed by Z, dressed in a crisp dress shirt and pressed dress pants. Hey, Rob. Hey, Z. Rob looks at me with a blank stare and slightly nods. Z ignores me and walks with Rob towards the video surveillance room. I feel another twinge of panic. Wow, I've never seen them so stern, Verdolin says. We all watch Julian join Rob and Z in the video room and close the door behind them. I stare at the closed door, wishing I could hear everything being said behind it. Should I run away now? What happens if I get arrested? I just got back into school. I can't get arrested now. 5 tense minutes later, Julian walks out of the room and heads towards us. I've known him for years. Julian will tell me what's going on. What's the update, Julian? I ask. Don't tell anyone else this, but I heard it's from your department, he whispers. My heart sinks. We only have 9 people in the department, making the odds 1 in 9 that I'm the culprit. Wow, that's crazy, I whisper back. What did they steal? I'm not sure, but it must have been big. They're planning on calling the cops soon. I've heard enough. My face goes pale. I dash to the washroom. I stare at my reflection in the mirror and think about my future. I'm 22 years old. I could potentially go to jail. What will my parents say? What will my friends say? Will I get kicked out of school again? Will I ever get another job? What should I do? I return to the customer service area and tell Sophie I'm taking an early lunch. As I walk out of the store towards Quiznos, I spot a cop car pulling into the parking lot. I quicken my walk and slip inside the sub shop. I order my usual custom-made sandwich and pay. I take a seat beside the window that overlooks my store. 2 cops walk inside. I don't touch my sandwich. My appetite is gone. I sit still for the next 30 minutes and think about all the wrong I've done in the past year and how it's all finally come back to haunt me. I resign myself to my fate. I'll just have to face it like a man. I've had this coming for a long time, I tell myself. I wrap up my sandwich and put it inside a bag. Maybe I'll get to eat it in jail. I slowly walk back to the store. It feels like the longest 50 feet I've ever walked in my life. As soon as I step inside, Sophie jumps up out of nowhere and stands in front of me, her eyes wide. Oh my God, Calvin just got arrested. She doesn't notice the relief on my face when I respond with, No way, what happened? Sophie tells me a long story while we stand in the doorway. I can barely hear her. I feel the weight lift off my shoulders. I take a few deep, calming breaths. Then I eat my sandwich and return to work. Kelvin, who had just arrived for his shift, stands inside the manager's room beside the cops. Rob enters the room and closes the door behind him. I stare at the door again, this time with a crooked smile.
That was Behind Closed Doors, written and read by Stephen Rahman. Tonight's final story finds our narrator pouring his heart out to a friend about his love life, and then taking up her advice right there and then. Let's listen now as Stephen Rahman reads the story, My Psychiatrist.
My Psychiatrist by Steve Rahman. Rachel and I sit on the ledge of a concrete planter containing a variety of plants and flowers in the parking lot of Swiss Chalet. I'm so full, Rachel says. That was good chicken. Yeah, I laugh. I'm surprised you finished your food. Well, it is Swiss Chalet, she responds. I love this place. The warm evening setting sun casts a beautiful orange glow on the Promenade shopping center just beyond us and on the cars in the mall parking lot. I'm still calm from a joint I smoked a couple of hours ago. Oh, look, Rachel cries out. Someone left their pack of smokes. They are Belmonts, too. I'm sure the person would have noticed if a couple of their smokes went missing, I say slyly. I agree. We light up the cigarettes and leave the pack on the ledge. So how are your sisters? Rachel asks and takes a deep drag. I take a couple of puffs and look at her and slowly exhale. You are right, as usual. They're both dating those guys who I thought were just friends. See, I told you, she laughs. They grew up here. Obviously they're going to date guys. For how long now, did they tell? 1 year for Iman and almost 2 years for Muna. I feel slightly put out. I take another drag. But on the bright side, at least they told me. Iman wants me to meet her boyfriend. That's good. Don't mess it up. I've been telling you for years. They're going to date. Nothing you can do about it. I see the look of triumph on Rachel's face. I've seen that look for the last 4 years. Every conversation. She loves being right. And she usually is. Rachel takes another drag and exhales. How's Rena? Still confused about her? I started dating Rena the previous week. As usual, as with most girls, I can't seem to connect with her. Well, she's starting to grow on me a bit, but I don't think we're connecting. I don't really like talking to her. She was over last night, though. What am I going to do with you? Rachel sighs. So you don't like her at all? I think she has potential, but something just isn't right. Did you use a condom? She suddenly asks. Of course. I falter as Rachel's bright blue eyes bore into mine. I feel like those eyes can see through me. They can always tell when I'm lying, confused, or upset. That's why I don't bother keeping secrets from Rachel. No, I admit. I trusted her, and she said she's on the pill. She's a nice girl. You idiot, Rachel yells, and slaps me on the arm. Everyone knows to practice safe sex. I know. Rachel takes another drag on her cigarette. The air smells of tobacco. The smell and meditative deep breaths and full stomach ease my mind. We both sit quietly, almost lazily. I like these moments of silence, I think to myself. Most girls just want to talk nonstop. So are you going to see her again? Rachel's question snaps me out of my daydream. Tonight. I'm supposed to pick her up from work, I stammer. How are things with Danny? She shrugs. You know, I don't get it, I say. How can you still love someone after they've cheated on you? She shrugs again. Like, if he cheated on you once, he's going to cheat again, I continue. As soon as things get rough, he'll jump on someone else. Rachel looks down. I think since things were good for so long, it's just one bump in the road, she says. In the grand scheme of things, if this is the only bad thing that happens, I can live with it. We take a couple more cigarettes from the pack and light up. We both take long, calm drags. The waitress who served us locks the doors to the restaurant and waves at us. Her round figure and kind smile remind me of my mother. We both nod and smile back. How's Zara? Rachel asks. I stay silent and take my time to answer. I exhale smoke slowly. I need to think about the question. Zara is a girl I have a crush on. Naturally, I tell Rachel how I feel about Zara whenever I see her. She's fine, I finally say. She still doesn't like you. Who cares? Rachel responds. Things are going well between her and the boyfriend? I think so. I think I still like her. We've been friends for so long. I need your help. You've always been my psychiatrist. You should tell her how you feel, Rachel says in a matter-of-fact way. I look into her blue eyes once again. I realize my relationship with Zara and Rachel is very similar. They're both friends I've developed strong feelings for. I take another deep drag and exhale. I need more help. It's not that simple, I say. Like I said, she has a boyfriend. Well, she should know how you feel. Some girls have boyfriends that are just convenient and are nice. They won't break up for just any reason. It's not like he's doing anything wrong. I think about what Rachel said. Her boyfriend definitely isn't a nice guy. The dude cheated on her. Yet it still wasn't enough reason for her to break up with him. We ash her cigarettes. But how would I even begin to tell her? Just go chill with her. Get her flowers and tell her. I look towards the mall across the street and pretend I'm deep in thought. I look around and notice the flowers right behind Rachel. Chilling? Check. Flowers? Check. And you have to call me right before you tell her and right after you finish. Phone call to Rachel? Check. I think long and hard. Rachel continues to give her advice. This time a mini lecture on condoms and STDs. I nod and shake my head at random moments to make it sound as though I'm listening. Right? Rachel says, snapping me out of my thoughts. Oh yeah, for sure, I reply. It's time. I hit dial on my cell phone and stand up. Oh, are we leaving? She asks. Damn, awkward question. Rachel rummages through her bag for her keys while I pick the tiny flowers from behind her. I don't have time to coordinate the colors or to make a nice bouquet. She turns around and I hold up my sad little collection. By the way, Zara is actually you, I say quietly. I like you. Thanks for the advice. I wait. I see a slight smile across her face, but her blue eyes avoid mine. She seems embarrassed or shy. I can't tell. She moves in to hug me. I hold her in my arms. I feel more relaxed than I've felt all night. It's always been you, I say. I close my eyes and feel the warmth of her body and the sun. We sit back down on the ledge of the concrete garden. I wait for her reaction. I need to think about this. My heart sinks. Rachel, calm, cool, and patient, and never wrong.
That was Stephen Rahman reading his story, My Psychiatrist. This concludes Life Rattle number 1302. My name is John Dunford. Lori Callis recorded Stephen reading his stories. Life Rattle was created by Arnie Ackman and Guy Allen. Be sure to tune in next week for more new stories.